Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Continuing in part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, chapter 11, The Modes of the Self. Since the self which we come to realize by the path of knowledge is not only the reality which lies behind and supports the states and movements of our psychological being, but also that transcendent and universal existence which has manifested itself in all the movements of the universal. The knowledge of the self includes also the knowledge of the principles of being, its fundamental modes, and its relations with the principles of the phenomenal universe. This was what was meant by the Upanishad when it spoke of the Brahman as that which, being known, all is known. Yasmin vijnate sarvam vijnatam. It has to be realized first as the pure principle of existence. Afterwards, says the Upanishad, its essential modes become clear to the soul which realizes it. We may indeed, before realization, try to analyze by the metaphysical reason and even understand intellectually what being is and what the world is. But such metaphysical understanding is not the knowledge. Moreover, we may have the realization in knowledge and vision, but this is incomplete without realization in the entire soul experience and the unity of all our being with that which we realize. And this is the distinction made in the Gita between Sankhya and Yoga. Both are necessary to an integral knowledge. It is the science of Yoga to know, and the art of Yoga to be unified with the highest, so that we may live in the self and act from that supreme poise, becoming one not only in the conscious essence, but in the conscious law of our being, with the transcendent divine whom all things and creatures, whether ignorantly or with partial knowledge and experience, seek to express through the lower law of their members. To know the highest truth and to be in harmony with it is the condition of right being. To express it in all that we are, experience, and do is the condition of right living. But rightly to know and express the highest is not easy for man, the mental being, because the highest truth, and therefore the highest modes of existence, are supramental. They repose on the essential unity of what seem to be the intellect and mind, and are, to our mental experience of the world, opposite poles of existence and idea, and therefore irreconcilable opposites and contradictions. But to the supramental experience, complementary aspects of the same truth. We have seen this already in the necessity of realizing the self as at once one and many. For we have to realize each thing and being as that. We have to realize the unity of all as that, both in the unity of some and in the oneness of essence. And we have to realize that as the transcendent who is beyond all this unity. And this multiplicity which we see everywhere is the two, opposite, yet companion poles of all existence. For every individual being is the self, the divine, in spite of the outward limitations of the mental and physical form through which it presents itself at the actual moment, in the actual field of space, in the actual succession of circumstances that make up the web of inner state and outward action and event, through which we know the individual. So, equally, every collectivity, small or great, is each the self, the divine, similarly expressing itself in the conditions of this manifestation. We cannot really know any individual or any collectivity if we know it only as it appears inwardly to itself, or outwardly to us, but only if we know it as the divine, the one, our own self employing its various essential modes and its occasional circumstances of self-manifestation. Until we have transformed the habits of our mentality so that it shall live entirely in this knowledge, reconciling all differences in the one, we do not live in the real truth, because we do not live in the real unity. The accomplished sense of unity is not that in which all are regarded as parts of one whole, waves of one sea, but that in which each, as well as the all, is regarded wholly as the divine, wholly as our self in a supreme identity. And yet, so complex is the Maya of the infinite, there is a sense in which the view of all as parts of the whole, waves of the sea, or even as in a sense separate entities, becomes a necessary part of the integral truth and the integral knowledge. For if the self is always one in all, yet we see that for the purposes at least of the cyclic manifestation, it expresses itself in perpetual soul forms which preside over the movements of our personality through the world and the eons. This persistent soul existence is the real individuality, which stands behind the constant mutations of the thing we call our personality. It is not a limited ego, but a thing in itself infinite. It is, in truth, the infinite itself, consenting from one plane of its being to reflect itself in a perpetual soul experience. This is the truth which underlies the Sankhya theory of many Purushas, many essential, infinite, free, and impersonal souls reflecting the movements of a single cosmic energy. It stands also, in a different way, behind the very different philosophy of qualified monism, which arose as a protest against the metaphysical excesses of Buddhistic nihilism and illusionist Advaita. The old semi-Buddhistic, semi-Sankhya theory, which saw only the quiescent and nothing else in the world except a constant combination of the five elements and the three modes of inconscient energy, lighting up their false activity by the consciousness of the quiescent in which it is reflected, is not the whole truth of the Brahman. We are not a mere mass of changing mind stuff, life stuff, body stuff, taking different forms of mind and life and body from birth to birth, so that at no time is there any real self or conscious reason of existence behind all the flux, or none except that quiescent who cares for none of these things. There is a real and staple power of our being behind the constant mutation of our mental, vital, and physical personality. And this we have to know and preserve in order that the infinite may manifest himself through it according to his will in whatever range and for whatever purpose of his eternal cosmic activity. And if we regard existence from the standpoint of the possible, eternal, and infinite relations of this one from whom all things proceed, these many of whom the one is the essence and the origin, and this energy, power, or nature through which the relations of the one and the many are maintained, we shall see a certain justification even for the dualistic philosophies and religions which seem to deny most energetically the unity of beings and to make an unbridgeable differentiation between the Lord and his creatures. If in their grosser forms these religions aim only at the ignorant joys of the lower heavens, yet there is a far higher and profounder sense in which we may appreciate the cry of the devotee poet when, in a homely and vigorous metaphor, he claimed the right of the soul to enjoy forever the ecstasy of its embrace of the Supreme. "I do not want to become sugar," he wrote. "I want to eat sugar." However strongly we may found ourselves on the essential identity of the one self in all, we need not regard that cry as the mere aspiration of a certain kind of spiritual sensuousness, or the rejection by an attached and ignorant soul of the pure and high austerity of the Supreme Truth. On the contrary, it aims in its positive part at a deep and mysterious truth of being which no human language can utter, of which human reason can give no adequate account, to which the heart has the key, and which no pride of the soul of knowledge, insisting on its own pure austerity, can abolish. But that belongs properly to the summit of the path of devotion, and there we shall have again to return to it. The sadhaka of an integral yoga will take an integral view of his goal and seek its integral realization. The divine has many essential modes of his eternal and self-manifestation, possesses and finds himself on many planes and through many poles of his being. To each mode, its purpose. To each plane or pole, its fulfillment, both in the apex and the supreme scope of the eternal unity. It is necessarily through the individual self that we must arrive at the one, for that is the basis of all our experience. By knowledge, we arrive at identity with the one, for there is, in spite of the dualist, an essential identity by which we can plunge into our source and free ourselves from all bondage to individuality, and even from all bondage to universality. Nor is the experience of that identity a gain for knowledge only, or for the pure state of abstract being. The height of all our action also, we have seen, is the immersion of ourselves in the Lord. Through unity with the divine will or conscious power, by the way of works, the height of love is the rapturous immersion of ourselves in unity of ecstatic delight with the object of our love and adoration. But again, for divine works in the world, the individual self converts itself into a center of consciousness through which the divine will, one with the divine love and light, pours itself out in the multiplicity of the universe. We arrive in the same way at our unity with all our fellow beings through the identity of this self with the Supreme, and with the self in all others. At the same time, in the action of nature, we preserve by it, as sole form of the One, a differentiation which enables us to preserve relations of difference in oneness with other beings and with the Supreme Himself. The relations will necessarily be very different in essence and spirit from those which we had when we lived entirely in the ignorance, and oneness was a mere name or a struggling aspiration of imperfect love, sympathy, or yearning. Unity will be the law. Difference will be simply for the various enjoyment of that unity. neither descending again into that plane of division which clings to the separation of the ego sense, nor attached to an exclusive seeking for pure identity which cannot have to do with any play of difference, we shall embrace and reconcile the two poles of being where they meet in the infinity of the highest.